You're listening to a highlight from the Yishai Fleisher Show on Voice of Israel.
Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show here on Voice of Israel, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. This half hour, a discussion of two great characters in Jewish life. One, our beloved hero, our master, our number one leader, number one prophet, and number one most famous person of all time, Moses, our great leader, Moshe Rabbeinu. And on the other side of the ring, coming in wearing black and red, is our great nemesis, Amalek, and starring for the Amalek team, Haman. And those are the two issues that we need to discuss today. Getting ready for both today, which is a very special day, the day of passing, and also the day of birth of Moses. And also getting ready for Shabbat, a special Shabbat where we have a very special commandment to remember what the nation of Amalek did to the Jewish people as they exited and exodused from Egypt and which were on the way to receive the Torah and to the land of Israel. That is a mitzvah, a commandment called Parshat Zachor. Remember it well, because you got to remember to forget. You got to remember to erase the memory of Amalek. So that's the issue, the issues of these two great personalities that we're going to be discussing this half hour. And that is because it's time to get ready for Shabbat and get ready for some spirituality. Let's cleanse ourselves from some of the dross of the week by looking inward, looking upward with Spiritual Cafe. And we are joined for Spiritual Cafe by Rabbi Mike Foyer, who is the educational director, really a spiritual director, of Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov here in beautiful Nachlaot, Jerusalem. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Yishai. Great to be here.
Well, today is a day where we light a Yahrzeit candle. We light a candle to commemorate the passing of the greatest human being that ever lived, the one who we owe basically everything to in terms of the life that we live today, and the Torah that we follow was brought down through the advent of one messenger, one person who was sent on a very important mission.
I shall send you.
Me? Who am I to lead these people? They'll never believe me. They won't even listen.
I shall teach you what to say.
But I was their enemy. I was the prince of Egypt, the son of the man who slaughtered their children. You've chosen the wrong messenger. How can I even speak to these people?
Who made man's mouth? Who made the deaf, the mute, the seeing, or the blind? Did not I? Now go!
Indeed, it was Moses who was sent on the mission to get the Jews out of Egypt, to bring them out in a strong hand and to take them through the splitting of the Red Sea and bring them to Mount Sinai and bring them to receive the Torah and then to the Sinai desert to encircle after the punishment of not being able to allow to go into the land of Israel. He taught a whole generation, a new generation that was born, came to the edge of the land of Israel, prayed so much to be able to come in, but did not merit it. And our sages say that Moses is going to be, his kind of spirit is going to be involved in the final bringer and the final messenger, who is going to be Messiah.
And pretty soon, that'd be now.
So Moses was buried on Har Nevo. His burial place was hidden away from mankind so that nobody would know and nobody would turn it into a place of idol worship. This most famous person who ever existed is also the most humble of all people that ever existed. And there's that is not a duality, but rather a one-to-one relationship. In order to be that greatest human being, that most famous human being, you have to be the most humble, the smallest in your own eyes. Explain that to us.
I don't actually think it's a matter of being small in your own eyes. It's important to note that the word that's used is Moshe Haya Anav Mikol Adam, right? Which is, it's true, usually translated as humble. But the idea of being small in your own eyes or lowly in Hebrew is to be shafal ruach, right? To be lowly of spirit. It's an entirely different word. And I would venture to say that humility in Hebrew has to do with simplicity. That you are exactly what you are and nothing more and nothing less. You know, most of us are a compound of what we are, what others think we are, what we think we ought to be, what my mother thought I should have been, you know, what my teacher in fourth grade said I should be. You know, we live a very compound existence. And because of that, it really weakens our ability to bring out that divine voice that's inside of us. It's like it comes out and then it shatters. It goes into this channel that's a dead end and that one. Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly who he was. And in fact, arguably, more than any other human being before or since, knew exactly who he was. And that was the power of his humility, which is really his simplicity. Not in the sense that he was a simple person, in the sense that he was not compound. He was purely his own voice, and it was that that allowed him to speak in the voice of God.
Being Moses, as I was reflecting upon it this morning, is no simple matter. He went through a lot of challenges in life, and really the greatest characters of the Bible are all super challenged characters. If you want to go through King David or Jacob, these are people who went through trials and tribulations. Moses' leadership was challenged by Korach. And they called him names. They said, you're not humble at all. You are trying to be haughty. You're trying to reign and rule over the people. And you're trying to say that you're holier than thou.
Well, you know, being challenged by definition goes together with greatness. I promise you, you've never heard of anybody who didn't have challenges in their life. I don't mean you don't know anyone who didn't have challenge. I mean that people who have no challenges in their life, you've never heard of them, because it's the overcoming of challenges that makes you great. I mean, that's what the sages, not actually the sages, the prophets taught us when they said, Tzadik Sheva Yipol V'Kum, right? A righteous person is one who falls seven times and gets up. And it's not the fact that he falls that makes him righteous. It's the fact that he gets up and keeps going. Right? And that definitely was Moshe's greatness, no question. That, and I just have to say, this image is so strong for me of how he knew himself. You know, he was on the mountain for 40 days to bring down the Torah. And this whole question of what that means, I mean, like the Torah that we have, as you pointed out, this is the Torah we live our lives by. This is the Torah that Moshe brought to us. But is it the same Torah that God looked into and created the world? I mean, yes and no. Why? Why do I mean no? Because, of course, God's perspective on what the Torah really is must be incredible. I mean, look, I've been learning Torah pretty seriously for about 13, 14 years. And I can tell you every time I look, there's something new. And we as a people have been learning Torah for 3,500 years or so. And every generation we find something new. So what do you imagine God sees in there when he looks? So the Torah that God is holding is beyond humanity. Moshe was able to bring down the highest that we could really receive. And how did he do it? How did he do it? 40 days and 40 nights. The Ibn Ezra, early medieval biblical commentator from Spain, says a profound thing. What was Moshe doing on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights? He was looking at himself in a mirror, in this aspeklaria me'ira, right? This very clear lens on himself. And in seeing himself after 40 days and 40 nights of knowing truly who he was, and therefore where that opening within him for the divine light was, he was able to bring down the highest articulation of the divine will that humanity has ever known.
On the simple level, though, he was being taught the esoteric knowledge, the Torah knowledge.
I'm not so sure. What do you mean by teaching?
Well, there's a lot of laws. There's a lot of things to adjudicate. I mean, I think of it just in a simple terms. He had to come down with a law, and then later on, that law was also constantly being refined or understood fully when people brought questions. People would bring him questions. In fact, when he went up to the mountain, he says, listen, here's Aaron and Hur. They're the ones going to be taking over the question period time. If you have any problems, bring it to them. But when he was down in the lower domains, he was indeed handling people's issues.
Yeah, but you know, it says nowhere in the simple text of the Torah that Moshe brought the Torah down from Mount Sinai. It says he brought the two tablets, you know, the Ten Commandments. And in the sages, there's a whole argument. Many of them believe that what we call the Torah was revealed to Moshe in the 40 years of wandering in the desert. It's an articulation of the experience that he had there. But that what happened at Sinai was an opening between heaven and earth. And the idea that the Ten Commandments themselves, you know, the sages teach that all the 613 mitzvot are actually contained within those commandments. You know, so I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I think what was happening there was his transformation so that he could be a proper vessel and then responsive to the needs of the people.
Speaking of vessel, he was also a flawed vessel. in that he was human, and the Torah is replete with issues that little things that Moses said that were not okay. For example, he says right in the beginning to God, after it got worse for the Jews, mm-hmm. after his initial altercation with Pharaoh, and he says to God, like, you only made it worse. And he gets kind of a smash for that. And later on, you know, he says, God, you know, if I, the people yearn for meat, for flesh to eat. And he says, listen, if we slaughter all the sheep, and if we catch the fish in the sea, we're not going to have enough flesh for these people to eat. And God's like, you think God's hand is short? And then later on, you know, he gets angry at the Jewish people. He smashes the rock. There's a lot of little, moments, and I always find this to be one of the most entertaining and incredible parts of Judaism, is that the sages will point out, here's where he made a mistake. Mm-hmm. Here's where he made a mistake. You see that? That was not right. I mean, this is the only religion I sometimes make fun of my, my friends that have other religions. I say to them, you know, did Muhammad make any mistakes? No. Did Jesus make any mistakes? No, not so. There's nothing in the books. I'm like, our guys, they're pretty, they must be not as good because our guys are full of mistakes.
Well, I mean, it's because we're actually human. I mean, and in that is our greatness. This is exactly what I meant about the Torah that Moshe brought down. If Moshe had brought God's Torah down to the world, it would not be relevant to human beings. I mean, of course it's God's Torah, but I mean, from God's perspective, it had to pass through the lens of a soul that on one hand was so elevated and so clear, and so, as I said, simple. On the other hand, it absolutely had to be the divine voice. And this is the same challenge we're living today.
Man, why didn't God give it to everybody at once? Why did it need to be an elevated person, a tzaddik, if you will, a righteous man who is going to be that vessel of communication?
So, but before I answer, I want to point out that your question is the same question the nations of the world ask us all the time. That if we're meant to be a nation of priests and a holy people and to bring God's word to the world, then why not, if God wanted the whole world to have his word, why not give it to everyone? And I think that the answer really lies in the nature of what relationship is. Don't forget, the fundamental underlying principle of the Torah is that God desires a relationship with the world. And you don't have a relationship with everybody off the bat because you can't know what a relationship is. Now, of course, God could. Fine. That's not his problem. But humanity needed to develop the capacity for an intimacy of relationship with the divine through action. That's what the Torah wants. It wants action, wants us to act in the world informed by the divine will. And Moshe had to reach the point where he could overcome and continue to feed us the energy that will allow us to overcome what is the fundamental challenge of being human, which is that this really matters. Like, I'm a creature, I smell, I poop, I die, my flesh will rot, and you're telling me it matters what shoe I put on first in the morning? You know, it takes an extreme experience of divine intimacy to overcome that barrier. And I really believe that's what Moshe was doing on the mountain for 40 mm-hmm. days. And then when he came down, he had to teach people. And by the way, it took them 40 years to stop being slaves and begin being servants of God.
I think more correct to say is that it took 40 years to get rid of a generation who was stuck in slave mentality.
Okay, fair enough.
And you couldn't cleanse out the slavery out of them without getting rid of them.
Begs the question for our generation, doesn't it?
It does. And I do think that there are moments in time where you encounter a generation that has certain ideas in their head and you cannot cleanse them of those ideas because they become like hard-coded and there's nothing to do but to wait them out. And in fact, I want to tell you one of the greatest Torah experiences I ever had in my entire life.
What's
okay,
that?
I'll tell you an amazing story, and has something to do with this. Many years ago, I had been working already in the field of Aliyah for many years, and I read the verse about shooing away the mother bird and taking the eggs or the chicks.
Mm-hmm.
For yourself, it's a Torah commandment that's called Shiluah Haken, right? Shooing away the mother bird to be kind so she doesn't see you taking away the her chicks and her eggs. And I thought to myself, you know what this really means? Of course, there's the actual commandment, but another meaning of it is that when you're trying to bring one generation to Aliyah and the previous generation is trying to slow you down, so you have to shoo away the mother bird, shoo away the previous generation so that you can take the chicks and the eggs for yourself. So I kept this to myself for a long time because I thought to myself, if I ever said this in public, they
will lose all your funding
or they will crucify me, until I found that the Balatur Abiram says it about that very verse. He says that exactly that when God took the Jewish people in the desert, he realized that they had slave mentality, so he had to shoo away one generation in order to bring in the next generation. Specifically about Aliyah, specifically about the issue of coming to the land of Israel. And Moses maybe belonged to that very generation at the same time that he was this above person, above all the pettiness. At the same time, he was, shall we say, tainted with that generation's outlooks, and it needed a new era, a new period to come into the land of Israel. But the pain of Moses, that he yearns to come to the land of Israel, is something that constantly reverberates in a Jew's heart. Mm. And today on the 7th of Adar, you really feel that his final yearning to come to the land of Israel wasn't fulfilled. And if you really want to be a Moses person,
you got to be here.
You got to be here.
You got to eat the fruit of the land.
And you got to, that little like drop of blood of Moses inside of us, you know, fulfill for him the great dream of coming to the land of Israel. We are on Spiritual Cafe with Rabbi Mike Foyer. We're going to take a tiny break, and we're going to come back. We're going to turn 180 degrees to the great nemesis of the Jewish people and Moses, the nation of Amalek.
Live from the heart of Israel, this is Voice of Israel.
You know, when you fall in love with someone, you do whatever it takes.
Brit Luda is in love with the land of Israel. Listen to my interview with this Norwegian Christian Zionist who has just released her new book of photography, The Mountains of Israel, A Taste of Heaven.
It's love to Hashem, it's love to the land, it's love to the Torah, and it's love to the people.
For the full interview, check out the Josh Aston Show archives on voiceofisrael.com.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Voiceofisrael.com, that's the website.
Yeah.
On Twitter, it's @VOIsrael.
That's exactly it.
And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Voice of Israel.
And don't forget, all of the shows, all of the highlights, all of the videos, profiles on the show hosts, the full schedule, and you can listen to the live stream. All there, voiceofisrael.com.
All right, folks, we are back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show. We are with Rabbi Mike Foyer on Spiritual Cafe, getting ready for Shabbat. It's a very special Shabbat, this Shabbat, which is the seventh day of rest. And this coming up one is about, has a special commandment to it, and that is remembering the actions of the nation of Amalek as they struck us on the way out of Egypt, coming to the land of Israel, and we were attacked. Also, the Baal HaTorah mentions that specifically the nation of Amalek attacked the Jewish people as they were heading to the land of Israel because they were very concerned that the Jewish people were going to make it like home, to the home plate. So they were trying to tackle us at home plate. And the reason that they were doing that is because for Amalek, the nation of Amalek, it's one thing if the Jewish people are in the desert studying the Torah in a very undetached, very kind of spiritual, heavenly way. But once Torah is being brought down to the material world, once it comes down to action, and action is the land of Israel, where it actually becomes real, where it all touches the physicality of this world, well, that is a great danger because that's the domain. The lower domain is one that Amalek controls, and it does not want the Jewish people to infiltrate with our clean purity and spirituality into lower domains. That should be the abode of Amalek. So they get very nervous when we start to make it real.
That's because they know that we understand that the lower domain is what really matters. You know, that we're both called Reshit in the Torah. Israel is called Reshit, which is a beginning, right? But not just a beginning, any old beginning, right? From the beginning of the Torah is Bereshit. It's the inception point on which everything is built. And Amalek is also called Reshit by Bilam, the great prophet of the nations, later in the Book of Numbers. We'll get there someday. And what does it mean that we're both called the same thing? I think it's quite simple, is that there are two ways the world can go. And it all comes down to whether you think action matters. Right? When the Torah describes how Amalek attacked us, they say, Asher korcha baderech. Right? And the sages say, what is this, Asher korcha baderech, who happened upon you on the way? So they say korcha can mean two things. It can be kor, like cold, like they cooled you down. Don't get so excited. Don't act on your beliefs. Come on. You think these things really matter? Yeah, okay, in your conceptual framework, but is it enough to act on? Come on. The other thing is, Asher korcha baderech is a lashon of keri,
of happenstance. Oh, no, sure, that happened, but it doesn't have any meaning, right? Your actions don't have any meaning. Yeah, do it, fine, but don't think that it means something. And this is the battle we're fighting. We're fighting this battle in the world. This is, the battle is not a battle of ideology, of theology, of revelation. It's a battle of just, does the human being's action matter in the world? And if you can't explain to me why, then at the end of the day, you're going to end up in some meaningless, nihilistic, you know, narrative fop, or you're going to end up chopping people's heads off because you can't handle it, and you're going to come up with an ideology that has to consume all the others.
Tell me about the mitzvah of Parshat Zachor, and of Shabbat Zachor. Like, what is this strange commandment to remember the actions of Amalek, but also to erase the memory? That there's obviously a contradiction there of sorts.
Well, I mean, on first glance, it's definitely a contradiction. How do you remember to forget something? Remember to wipe out the memory. At the same time, I think it goes to the heart of the fact that the word zachor in Hebrew doesn't really mean remember, as in the sense of the opposite of forgetting. What it really means is to take something which was in the past and call it into present consciousness. I mean, in English, the word is actually that way, remember. You're actually reattaching something which had not been in the forefront of your consciousness. So that's what we're called upon to do. Called upon to bring up this piece of our past, this existential struggle with this enemy that was represented by a people that would kill weak and innocent children, you know, and bring it into the front of our consciousness in order that we realize that that's a part of the human soul.
Also, Amalek was famous for its defilement. It would homosexually rape their victims, and also they would cut off the members of male victims. There was something about depravity, about sexual depravity, something very in contradistinction to the idea, the Jewish idea of family purity and of union. The opposite of is happenstance. The opposite of it is this kind of world of not a non-procreative world. And it made me think of the word you said, remember, is to reconnect, that they would dismember.
Yeah, absolutely.
They would cause a jumble of purpose and meaning.
Well, I think what you're calling depravity is all about destroying any meaningful relationship that could emerge from sexuality. I mean, you know, without getting into the whole discussion of family values, but just to the image of total domination and destruction of that which you take your pleasure from, right? It removes any possibility for relationship. It's just an object. This is not a person. And whereas Am Yisrael is all about the aspect of union being the foundation for real relationship.
That's amazing. It's an amazing... It's an amazing thing that the Jewish people are the small people that are meant to bring a message of unity with the other, with the other human being and family values, and also the other spiritual being in this world called God. And then there's this like bizarre world, this like contra energy, mm-hmm. and they're out there also, and they're supermen in their own way.
I got news for you. It's not just out there; it's in there, because that's the other aspect of this commandment. So you should remember. You should remember. It's written in the Torah. Remember, remember, to wipe out their memory. And Rashi, right, the great biblical commentator, says that you should destroy all of the nation of Amalek. You should even kill their cattle, lest anyone ever say, hey, that cow used to belong to Amalek. But it's bizarre. I mean, you just remember, forget, remember. It will never go away. It's eternal, written in the Torah. And furthermore, we know already the sages taught us that in the time of the first temple, all of these ancient nations were all mixed up by the Assyrians, so they don't really exist anymore. But nevertheless, here we are remembering. And what are we remembering? I got a very simple question for you. So we say that Amalek attacked the weak and the helpless who are at the rear, right? So what were the weak and helpless doing left behind without any protection? I mean, wasn't Am Yisrael there to protect them? Where were we going when they attacked us? We're going to Mount Sinai. We're going to meet God, right? You know what part of Amalek is in the world? Part of Amalek in the world is when you run ahead because you think you're going to get to the goal and you forget that the process matters too. And in that forgetting, you leave behind very precious things. We call them the weak and the old, right? You forget that, just like when I used to lead trips in the wilderness, you got a group of 10, 15 people on a 12-mile hike. The first person that gets campsite says, you know, I made it. You say, no, you didn't. What do you mean? Until the last person in our group gets here, you didn't make it. And that's Amalek. You think you can just be out for the goal and there by yourself. Like, I made it here to Israel. Thank God I'm here. Kids are here. But what about, you know, the millions of Jews back in America? We haven't made it.
And take politicians, take heed from Parshat Zachor. It's a team process. It's not about you getting elected. When you got elected, it's only the beginning of the amazing process of leading the Jewish people. Rabbi Mike Foyer, we're out of time. I want to wish you a Shabbat Shalom. May we remember to destroy the memory of Amalek this Shabbat. Thank you so much for being with me. More great stuff is on the way, folks. Stay tuned and Shalom.
Voice of Israel, your source for news and views on everything Israel and the Middle East.